Slam Knife.
Spoiler episode.
So here's the thing. If you're new to Linoleum Knife,
this is not an episode to start with.
If you don't know me, Dave White.
Or me, Alonzo Duraldi.
Both of us film critics. Me for the rap. Him also for the rap, except he's like the boss. Him also from the Who Shot You podcast and the Breakfast All Day show.
Yes.
Then you go away.
Start with another episode.
Go away from this episode and start with a different one. Because this is just a little special mini where we're going to...
spoil some movies.
Spoil movies. We're doing this because Serenity came out.
Yes. And Glass before it.
And Serenity is so stupid. And to discuss its stupidity involves spoiling the big surprise that takes place halfway through the film. That's what's happening.
Yeah. So, yeah, we're here to talk about spoilers. So, obviously, if you have not seen Serenity or Glass yet and you don't want them spoiled, then come back to this episode later. And, again, if you're a first-time listener, this is not an episode to start with. It's not really an episode. It's just us talking about spoilers.
Okay, spoil Glass, please.
Okay.
Because I still haven't seen it. Ain't gonna see it. Tell me all the things.
All right.
Even I don't know what these spoilers are.
Okay, so, you know, as you'll recall, Split ends with the revelation that all of this is happening in a contained universe with Unbreakable.
Right.
And that Bruce Willis's, you know, super-powered character has been running around for the last, you know, 20 years fighting crimes on the streets of Pittsburgh. So, in this movie now, James McAvoy, the Horde, is still running around loose. And Bruce Willis is trying to find him. And then they both get captured by Sarah Paulson, who claims to be a psychiatrist who studies in people who have delusions of superherodom. And she is there to cure the two of them and Samuel L. Jackson, the villain from Unbreakable, of the idea that they have superpowers. But then it turns out the first twist is that she is actually part of a secret cabal of people who are seeking out and eradicating superhuman individuals, that they really do exist, but that such individuals are too much of a pain in the ass for humanity to cope with, and they cause too much damage. So they go around and convince those people that they're not really superheroed, that they're crazy. So that's the first thing.
Okay.
Then you find out, actually there's three big...
Whoa!
Oh!
Yeah.
Oh no.
You find out that James McAvoy's abusive childhood with his mother happened because his father failed to whisk him away from her. And the reason that he failed to whisk him away from her is because he died in the train crash that Sam Jackson caused.
Oh.
To find out that Bruce Willis was superpowered.
Okay.
So when he finds that out, then he you know, Sam Jackson had been manipulating him into doing his evil bidding, but then he turns on Sam Jackson. Then finally, you find out that all the security cameras that Sarah Paulson makes a big point of having put up to keep Sam Jackson from escaping from world's most incompetent psychiatric hospital, that when he is seemingly taking a wrong turn while escaping, he's actually sending the feed to a private server so that there can be video evidence of the fact that McAvoy and Bruce Willis have superpowers. And at the end of the movie, Sam Jackson's mother, Bruce Willis's son, and Anya Taylor-Joy from Split...
right.
Share the footage with the world so that people will know that superpowered people exist and that maybe somebody else with superpowers will have it made manifest once they realize they are not alone in the world. But this all happens after Bruce Willis, McAvoy, and Sam Jackson are all killed.
But will they come back to life in the next movie?
They will not.
How do you know?
Well, apparently...
Have superheroes resurrect all the time.
True, but I think Shyamalan...
they're more resurrected than Jesus.
Shyamalan even said that he didn't want to do a sequel. And I suspect that...
That's not true.
How much you want to bet, though, that Bruce Willis... I don't know about McAvoy, but how much you want to bet that Willis and Jackson's deal were like, oh, sure, I'll come back for this one, kill but me kill me end. And we're right. done. Yeah, right. the Harrison Ford clause.
Right. That might be the case.
Yeah. So that's what happens in Glass.
Now, well, that just sounds tedious.
It is. Funny you should mention that. It's a total bore.
Let's spoil some other movies, too, besides this and Serenity.
What else is to be...
Well, do they escape from the escape room?
Only one person escapes, and then you find out that the whole deal was that they were... It's like bored millionaires, basically, watching people die.
So, and, like Hostel.
Essentially,
but
yeah.
But in Hostel, the millionaires go to the hostel... by a person to murder.
Right.
Yeah.
So this one, they're sort of betting on who's going to survive. The guy who makes it to the end is the kid from Take Me to the River. But then it turns out that the black girl college student also survives by some sneaky measure. And right. the two of them manage to break out at the end. And they're going to try and take down the evil company. But then the evil company is... purposely put them on a plane that they're planning to crash that has a very minimal chance of survival. So you end the film with them running the scenario to see what the percentages are of anybody making it out of that alive. So that in turn will become another, it'll be escape plane, I guess.
Escapes on a plane.
Yes. It's monkey fight and escape on this Monday to Friday plane.
In A Dog's Way Home, does the dog find its way home?
No, that's, yeah, that's, in, the, in, the that's trailer. In
the
trailer.
The guy's like, oh no, it can't be. Your dog's like, here I am. I don't remember how Replicas ended. We both saw it together.
Replicas, oh my God, I totally forgot how that ends.
Keanu Reeves becomes like the robot... guy at
does
the
he become
end
robot the... Keanu Reeves?
Yeah, doesn't he?
I don't remember. I think the robot wife and kids run off.
No,
I remember now. He's on the island with robot wife and kids, and they manage to resurrect the other daughter who they couldn't turn into a clone before, and who he tried to wipe out of their memories.
Right.
So not only does he like completely tamper with science and ethics, but he gets a total happy ending where he gets everything he wants, including the extra kid.
But then he also becomes robot Keanu for the corporation, doesn't he? At the end, like Dubai, they put the robot in a suit.
There's a separate robot Keanu with robot John Ortiz who is selling like super rich people on like putting their brains into new bodies.
Right.
You're right. I forgot. There's regular Keanu and robot Keanu. Oy, that movie.
I didn't see the upside.
Me neither.
Does everyone die at the end of that? That would be the upside, right?
If only, that would be the upside, yeah.
What else? What else?
Why are you shilly-shallying about getting to...
I just wanted to catch everyone up on everything necessary.
Okay, because Serenity is what we're... That's what we're really here to talk about.
Stan and Ollie, you know, they get old.
They do not get to make their Robin Hood
movie.
They
don't know. It's very sad. That's it. Okay, so Serenity.
Yes.
As we discussed in last week's episode, Matthew McConaughey plays a character named Baker Dill.
Baker Dill.
And he lives on an island.
Called Plymouth. Plymouth Island.
Plymouth, yeah, okay.
Because I remember early on thinking, wait, this is called Plymouth Island, but we're clearly in the southern, like right. we're in the Keys at least, if not further south.
Yeah.
So already I was like, where is this
They're
supposed to be?
They're far away from civilization.
Yeah.
His life there involves being a tour boat captain.
Fishing boat captain.
So that people can go out into the middle of the water and catch big...
tunas.
Fish.
And swordfish and stuff.
Yeah. He's very sweaty. Jimon Hounsou is his
his first mate.
Captain. Also, he's also very sweaty.
Yes. Pretty much every single person.
Everyone in this movie is real
very
sweaty.
Very sweaty.
except Anne Hathaway. Did you notice that? Anne Hathaway is always like
linen crisp,
turned out in these sort of Blake Lively Simple Favor outfits.
There's the guy in the suit who keeps just missing Matthew McConaughey.
He keeps trying to find Matthew McConaughey because he's got very important stuff to tell Matthew McConaughey.
Yeah.
And he can't get to him. And one of the guy in the suit is awake 24/7.
Apparently.
Like, so. He is never asleep. He is always running around. Just missing
Matthew McConaughey.
Excuse me, Mr. Dill. Boat went off into the water. I can't get to him.
I love that in his review for the rap, Bibbs compared that guy to the insurance investigator in Catalina Caper. I was like, well played, Bibbs.
Love that, man. Then there is... the middle-aged lady, the lady in the bait shop who knows everything.
Right.
And who tells everybody everything. Mm-hmm. You don't even have to ask her. And you just go into the bait shop and she will tell you everything about you and your day and the world around her and everything that's going on in the town.
Yes.
Then there is...
The bartender.
The bartender who's sort of inconsequential.
And then the old guy that McConaughey always buys drinks for... Like the old fisherman who always sits in the same spot and is never fleshed out into anything.
Then there is Diane Lane.
Yes.
Who is always walking around. Well, she's not walking around. She's lying down. She's always in a very, very...
filmy robe.
Gorgeous, silky robe that looks like a Dan Von Furstenberg wrap dress.
That she never takes off, no matter how sticky hot it gets.
She never takes off, even when she is getting...
She's in coitus.
She's getting it in with Matthew McConaughey. And they are getting it in on the daily.
Yeah.
And he is so much of a stud that her moans and holleration can be heard reverberating throughout the town.
Island, yeah. She has a cat.
There is her cat.
Yes, who goes missing a lot.
The cat is always missing and yet always there. That's a strange thing. Like, she's always saying to him, "Have you found my cat?" And then you see the cat. The cat's like outside. Well, it's sitting out there.
It's usually at his place.
Well, the way she says it.
Well, clearly there's...
It's meant to be something... Extra feline?
Winkety wink.
Yeah. Then there's the disembodied voice of the DJ on the radio station.
Right, who seems to just talking to Matthew McConaughey.
Every song is like, "That was the Bleu Bleu Zydeco," you know?
Mm, yeah.
And I'd like to talk to Baker Dill for a moment about catching that big tuna today.
Well, he never says his name, but...
Doesn't he?
He doesn't say the name.
I think he does.
I don't think he does, but it's clear, it's like, anybody out there trying to go for that big tuna? Yeah. Like, it seems like he's the one listener of this station.
I swear he says his name. Mm. Because by the middle to the end of the film, he's directly addressing him, saying, "Hey, come back in. We need you here. Like, we need you. Don't run away and do the thing. You know."
There's talk about Miami, but we're never quite clear again. Like, is this off the coast of Florida? We don't know.
Okay, so in comes Anne Hathaway.
Right.
And she walks right up to him.
Classic film noir femme fatale. The outfit. The past.
She walks right up to him in the sweaty bar. And she says, "Hello, Baker Dill. What are you drinking?" "I want you to kill my husband."
Well, she doesn't say that in the bar. She waits
whatever.
To
onto
she
says boat. It quickly enough.
But yeah, that's her whole thing, you know. Kill my rich husband.
Her rich husband is played by
Jason Clarke.
And that's your setup.
And then Jason Clarke shows up and we see him being very awful and abusive to Anne Hathaway in the process of also having sex with Anne Hathaway.
Yeah, which physically abusive, verbally abusive,
marital rape, basically.
Abusive to everyone else around him as well, verbally abusive to everyone he encounters. Tries to basically take over the boat from Matthew McConaughey.
I bring up only because of the twist.
Essentially is raping her.
Yes.
Whenever he feels like it.
Right.
And then comes the twist.
Well, no. First,
what am I missing?
The guy in the suit explains that he is the rules.
The rules. Which makes no sense.
And you find out throughout the film that Baker Dill and Anne Hathaway had a kid, and that she is now raising the kid with awful Jason Clarke.
Yes.
And the kid spends all of his time on the computer coding.
Yes.
And so then, and the very first shot of the film is this kid's face, and the camera goes closer and closer into his eye. And when that happened, I thought, is this entire movie going to be a figment of the kid's imagination?
Oh, did you think that right away?
Yeah, but I thought, no, that's too stupid. Well,
it's not stupid at all, except that it is.
But it's worse. It's not even that it's in the kid's imagination. The whole thing is a video game scenario that the kid is somehow programmed based on his sketchy memories of his father when they went fishing once when he was a little kid. So he's created this entire game, Plymouth Island. As Baker Dill figures out, he starts pulling maps off the wall, and it's the only thing on the map is this island. So, like, there's no point of reference. It's not off any coast. It's just there in the middle of the ocean. This whole thing is a scenario by which the kid is trying to muster up the will, I guess, to kill his own father, basically?
To kill his stepfather.
His stepfather, rather. Yes. Yeah, the stepfather. And everybody in the game is trying to stop McConaughey from killing him. And the rules
to stop McConaughey from killing
the stepfather,
Jason Clarke.
Yes. Yep. And like the rules is telling him he can't do it. And the bait lady and Jaimin Hansel, like everybody's trying to distract him or turn him around or get him to not take Jason Clarke out on the boat to kill him. But, he does. And then when he does is when in real life, I guess, the kid snaps and stabs the stepfather off screen.
Yes.
And we find out that he's basically going to get away with it because the stepfather was horribly abusive to him and Anne Hathaway. And then somebody's name is actually Dill Baker, like the coach or something, the
counselor high school,
at school. Yeah.
Okay. So
this is from Stephen Knight, who wrote and directed Lock,
which is a cool movie.
Yes.
Starring Tom Hardy.
Yes. And while you could accuse it of being gimmicky, it does a lot with that gimmick and creates drama out of it, which is that the whole movie is him in a car driving from like somewhere in England to London and having these phone conversations. And, you know, you come to find out all these things about this character, all the things that he's supposed to be doing the following day that he's walking away from, why he's doing it, what he has to tell his wife, like all this stuff. Actually, you know who's the voice of, I think, the wife? Either the wife or the pregnant woman in Locke, Olivia Colman.
Oh, yeah, I knew that.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay, so if this is a video game that the kid is creating.
Programming
all by himself. What he is then doing, is programming scenarios in which
his mother and stepfather are having abusive rough sex.
It's not rough sex.
Abusive sexual assault.
Yes. It's, and now, I've been thinking about this.
And Baker Dill doesn't even see it.
Hang on. I've been thinking about this. This could be programmed into the game as an act of justification.
Uh-huh.
That's one thing. The other reason it could be programmed into the game is because this kid, off camera, we don't know this is really happening, mm-hmm. but this kid has witnessed this taking place between his father and his mother and stepfather.
Ugh.
And it has traumatized him to the point where he's going to kill the stepfather. Right. I was thinking about that.
Okay.
Thinking, well, maybe he's seen this take place. And that's driving him to think, I have to kill this person because he's raping my mom. Right? Although the movie doesn't let you know that.
No.
The movie just has you watching this thing. And here's the other thing. The movie sets it up in a very prurient way.
Uh-huh.
So that you're meant to be sort of like perversely into it. Especially since in the scenario where he's assaulting her, she's calling him daddy.
Yeah, there's a
lot.
There's a weird...
Like, over and over, and he's into it, and he likes to be called that while he's raping her.
Yeah.
I don't get that
at all. Again, it's like you have to wonder if the movie was so invested in the gotcha twist that they actually went back and thought about all the ramifications of it. You know, like, you watch The Sixth Sense again knowing that Bruce Willis is dead, and you reread certain scenes in a different way. But this movie, if one were to actually have to endure it a second time, knowing what you know about the kid, it's like, so this kid is thinking about his dad's ass a lot, and...
there is the thrusty sex butt of Matthew McConaughey
and
in this movie.
And there is
lovingly photographed.
Diving off a cliff butt, and... Yeah. The other thing in the movie is there are moments where McConaughey and the kid seem to be sort of spiritually communicating with each other through water.
Yeah.
You know, where you're left to wonder, like, what's that about?
I can also understand the idea of a 13-year-old boy, you know, thinking, well, you know, here's this hot older lady and my dad's a stud.
Right.
You know, like, because what we learn, of course, is that Matthew McConaughey is dead.
Yeah.
That he was killed in Iraq.
Right.
And
posthumously received the Purple Heart.
And yeah. And so, like, the invention of this fantasy life for his father is that, yeah, he has this hot girlfriend and they do it.
And maybe that even explains why she never takes a robe off, because he can't actually give you a naked woman.
He's never seen a naked lady, so...
But he also crafts a scene between McConaughey and Hathaway where he, like, turns her around and,
and
does her on the boat in a very kind of rough way, too.
And so then you think, wait a second, now I'm programming into the game a scene where my father is having rough sex with my mom?
Yeah,
like, I'm lost and confused.
There's the reason for this movie's
existence.
There's an interesting moment where, like, McConaughey's character gets out of bed at 5 a.m. every day.
Yeah.
And at one point he tries to get out of bed before 5 a.m. and he physically can't do it. And it's a lot like that moment in... There's a part in Bandersnatch, which you still haven't done.
Which I probably won't.
You should. Where you were given the choice of, like, bite nail or tug earlobe.
Yes.
And whichever one you click, you see the guy, like, almost do it and then grab his hand and stop himself.
Yeah.
And that's where he realizes that he's not in control of the scenario. But Bandersnatch handles that whole...
Did you bite nail or tug earlobe?
I did both. I went through several times and tried both.
I would tug earlobe because that's what Carol Burnett would do.
There you go. In any of it, he doesn't do either, as it turns out.
I see.
That Bandersnatch is a lot more interesting about the idea of, like, somebody realizing they're in a video game. In this movie, it's like it just means that McConaughey yells at the sky some more. Which he does several times.
He does a lot of sky screaming.
Yes.
Jimon Hansu just disappears from the movie about halfway through.
Yeah.
Knowing full well, I think, that he is in a video game and has to get out of this ridiculousness. That's my only option. I haven't figured out why. The bait shop lady knows everything.
Well, Okay, I don't play a lot of video games, so I'm not an expert on this. But you remember in the Jumanji sequel... That guy from Flight of the Conchords who drives them in the Jeep is just there to spout off information and tell them what they need to know.
Yes.
There's a name for characters like that in video games.
I see.
And she is one of them.
I don't play video games.
I don't either.
So I don't know these things.
But
I get it, though. Okay. I get what you're saying.
Yes.
Yeah.
So I think that's the purpose that she serves.
Okay.
In the scenario.
Ugh.
And the thing is, I'm glad I saw this with you, because we could sort of look at each other and roll eyes, but it's not as
the ending is hilarious too, because there's this crazy happy ending where father and son are reunited.
Oh, right. I forgot about that.
On the spiritual plane.
Yeah.
Oh, they like hug each other and you're like, but you're dead.
Yeah.
And where are you?
Aren't you in juvie or something?
No, he's not.
No.
Because they didn't press charges.
Oh, that's
because
it was
an act of self-defense.
Yes.
Yeah.
But just generally speaking though, like, this movie, it does not have the, like, I think people want it to be as bananas as the twist is. And outside of the twist...
It is as bananas as the twist is.
Outside of the twist, it's kind of boring.
No, this movie's bonkers. And and if you can handle the content warnings of everything we've told you, because it is not pleasant to watch any of... the Jason Clarke and Anne Hathaway moments.
Right. Also, we saw it in a non-air-conditioned
screening. I gotta say this, Jason Clarke is a very effective villain in this movie, because not only do you fear what he's going to do next, mm-hmm. but you wish he were dead.
Well, yeah. You know? He definitely does all that. It's the sort of thing that, like, Richard Widmark used to do.
Yeah. So, if I'm going to give this movie any props at all, it's Jason Clarke being completely disgusting.
And Anne Hathaway's costumes.
And Anne Hathaway's costumes. So, yeah, like, obviously, don't go see this movie or don't watch this movie if the content that we have just described is
triggering
too much. But otherwise, it's absurd and stupid and
you can't believe that wacky. That, like, competent people got together and thought, yes, this.
Oh, no. I can totally understand where McConaughey reads the script and goes, yeah, man, a mind trip. You know what I mean?
Right.
Like, he's just that kind of guy, I think. I don't know this for a fact, but I think that actors get scripts like this and they just think about what they're going to be able to do in the movie.
Sure, sure. You know? And they think it's going to be like, the kind of movie that people are talking about. Like, ooh.
Right. Like, and if more people had seen this, they would be talking about it.
About how terrible it is,
yeah.
Yeah, Stephen Knight, I find it's vexing because I love Locke so much, but then he writes movies like Burnt.
Now tell me about the postscript of this with the distribution company and people angry at them.
Yeah.
Like McConaughey and Hathaway are furious now with them.
Yes. Well, apparently this got bounced around from different companies and it landed on Aviron, which is a fairly new small distributor. And the idea was they had committed to spend a certain amount on like advertising and stuff, and then in return McConaughey and Hathaway were going to go on like talk shows and, you know, really talk it up. Like,
We saw Hathaway on Ellen. Do both. Yeah.
But then they found out the distributor didn't keep their end of the bargain, and they only did very small TV buys that were like in weird regions at weird times of day, like that weren't going to sort of build, you know, audience knowledge of the film in any substantial way. Apparently, Aviron just took a big hit on A Private War, which they thought was going to be a bigger deal, and they thought was going to maybe get some Oscar attention for Rosamund Pike, but it did not. And so they just kind of cut bait on this one. And this one's been knocking around for like at least a year, right?
No, the trailer for this has been in theaters off and on. Like, they would pull the trailer for a while, they'd put the poster up for a while, then it would be gone, and it would come back. And it's like, oh, that movie. Like, I'm seeing the trailer again. I wonder when that's going to come out. Ever? Who knows?
So, yeah, anyway.
So then we show up for the press screening.
Oh, brother.
And we go into the Aviron offices, where I will never set foot again. They led us up into the screening room.
Yeah.
There are literally 12 chairs and a very long couch.
Yeah, and which is not uncommon.
That's not uncommon.
Studio screening rooms.
But the capacity of this room is no more than 20 to 25 people.
Yeah.
Okay? Because you're expected to sit on this room-length couch.
Right.
That goes from wall to wall. It's extremely long.
Yeah.
It's a good, like, 20 feet long. And people just keep coming. And they just keep coming. And they just keep coming. And suddenly, you have everyone squozed up on the couches, on the couch in the back. That's you and me.
Yeah.
All the chairs are filled. People are now sitting on the floor, on the steps.
In the aisles.
In the aisles. And then, 3 minutes before the film starts, the guy from Aviron comes in and says, okay, sorry about the seating. Usually people, you know, cancel at the last minute. And so they overbooked.
Right. Which I bet most distributors do.
I've never experienced this. I've never experienced... Only that, okay.
I was going to say, yeah, time, you have.
The one time I've experienced this was when... the best in the world, Matt. This was years ago.
Yes, yes. The person involved isn't even a film critic anymore.
Matt sat next to me, and Ben sat next to him.
Mm-hmm.
And Ben got up to go to the bathroom, and in comes... a very sort of
self-important person.
We'll call him a self-important person. A film critic in the city of Los Angeles who no longer is a film critic and no longer lives in Los Angeles,
yes,
but who at the time was, you know, one of the big people.
Yeah.
He's going to take that chair. And Matt's like, no, you can't. You can't.
It's taken.
He goes, well, who's there? Who's sitting there? And Matt's like, it's Ben Mankiewicz, you know, from TCM, blah, blah, blah. And the guy looks at Matt and goes, who are you? Who are you with? And Matt goes, your mom! I thought I was going to pee my pants.
So it is unusual, but sometimes, yes, they do overbook for these things.
Anyway, okay, so we're in this. That was the only other night I could remember in nearly 20 years of being a film critic in this city.
Right.
Where it was so overbooked that people were starting to fight over seats. Okay. Then someone says, hey, can y'all turn up the air conditioning a little bit? Because it's getting a little full room now. Here. It's getting a little stuffy and hot in here. And the guy goes, oh, no, the office building that we're in turns off the AC after 6 o'clock. It's like, what? What?
Huh? Now a warning?
And you knew this? You overbooked the room, and you knew that the AC was going to be out. It was broiling in there.
Yeah. That may be part of why I was not having a good time. Even with all the lunacy.
The one time I was at a screening where the air conditioning was out, other than this, was at Coyote Ugly. And I had a great time.
Did you not go with me to that screening of whichever Transformers movie it was? In the big Paramount Theater?
Oh, yes. I remember that one, too, when Greg got up and said, I can't.
Yeah.
And just walked out.
Yes, yes, yes. And there was one time at the Arclight, too.
I don't remember the one at the Arclight.
There was one at the Arclight, too, where there was no AC, and I thought I was going to die.
But, you know, Coyote Ugly, I was 100 degrees, and that was...
That's true. That was still nonstop entertainment.
Pure delight.
All right. So that's everything you ever wanted to know.
So, hey, Averon.
Oh, yeah.
Don't be overbooking your stuff anymore and get your AC together.
Yeah, like I'll go to an afternoon screening there, but nothing at night anymore. No.
No, I'm not going back ever. I don't want to get overbooked. I don't want to sit on the floor.
I don't know. I don't have your ability to be like, I'm not going to go to that.
I'm not going
to
go.
Sometimes I have to go to things.
I do what I want.
Fine.
How about that?
Meh. All right. Anyway, that's everything you need to know about
these crappy
about these stupid movies. If you are not already a member of our Patreon, you should go check out patreon.com/linoleumknife.
Sure, you should do
so
that.
So many cool things and prizes and extra shows.
At the new $1 level.
The new $1 level
where
gets
you get things.
Every weekday gets you an LKRX recommendation of a thing.
What a treat for you.
It will be.
That, I think so.
People seem to like
People
it.
People seem to enjoy it. Yeah.
Anyway, thanks for listening. Come back when we're doing a full-on episode. That'll be real soon. And
yes.
Until next time.
Goodbye.